Destination, freedom. Destination, freedom. Dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination, freedom. In the carefully kept annals of law enforcement, Munich, Germany is recorded as the largest police district in the world. But the 5th District, Wabash Avenue Station in Chicago, is recorded as second largest and busiest. Entrusted with the gigantic job of administration in the 5th District is Kentucky-born police veteran Captain Kinsey Blewett. In a chapter entitled Crime Fighter, Destination Freedom brings you the 5th District story.
It was a warm, peaceful summer day, and the windows were down, and the talk was lazy. My squad was cruising along, circulating up and down the district like the blood in a man's veins.
72, call your station.
I knew the district like an old carefully studied book. This book was a teeming, burly 5th Police District.
21.
In territory, one of the smallest.
51st.
In population, bigger than many of the cities
21.
Of the world. 200,000 people crowded into 3 square miles of slums and semi-slums. Swank apartments and shaky shacks in countless churches. 18 schools, 7 theaters, 1 hospital, 2,000 business enterprises, an orphanage, and a YWCA. All this I knew by heart.
88, 5177 Perry Avenue. A man causing a disturbance on the second floor. 88, 5177.
So when my
Perry
car, number 88, got a call that warm summer day, 1944... It was just at the time for me to report into the station. The other officers were left to answer it.
Well, here you are, Lieutenant. Yeah. Sorry you can't come along for the ride.
Yeah. You're going to miss a nice, pleasant disturbance.
Well, I'd like to go along, but I'm afraid I'll have to let you boys handle it. I'm due inside.
You won't miss anything. Probably just some guy had one too many and wants to tell the world about it.
Oh, no, no, man. I bet it's a guy trying to learn how to jitterbug. Probably got his radio up loud and his snowshoes on.
5177 Prairie Avenue, a man causing a disturbance.
Well, whatever it is, you better step on the gas. Dispatcher's still calling.
We'll answer him as soon as we roll. So long, Lieutenant. See you this evening.
So long, boys. It was just a routine call. Another incident in the book I knew so well. I went into the station. Some blocks away, squad car number 88 pulled up in front of 5177 Prairie Avenue. Its team of officers got out, ambled up to the building.
Looks like much, doesn't it?
Nah, it's quiet now.
All routine. A page I could have predicted. Two officers going up to investigate a disturbance. One staying outside, one opening the door of the building.
You want to stay outside, Joe?
Yeah, all right.
Going casually into the lobby. Then seeing a woman running toward him, hysterical with fright and panic.
Help! Help! He's gonna kill me! Help!
What's the matter? What are you talking about?
Let me go! Let me go!
Now, wait a minute.
He's
hey, lady, come
Where
here.
Where can you go? Run! Run!
And she was gone. For a second, the lobby was empty. Dead still. The officer moved towards the second floor. Then there came that page in the book which no policeman can predict. The end of a chapter. A wild-eyed, disheveled man stood blocking the stair. A German Luger in each hand.
Get out of the way.
Put down those guns.
Get out of the way.
Put down...
Hey, what's going on in here?
Mac, was that you shooting?
Mac?
Get out of my way.
Hey, what...
When the second officer crumbled to the floor, the wild-eyed man stalked out of the door, fired point-blank at people on the street, swung around to fire again and ran into a blast from another officer. Went around like a top, drop to the ground, and stay there. And all evening, the neighbors milled about outside the apartment. And the squads brought fresh detectives to probe into the hidden life of the wild-eyed man. To find out how it happened and why. To reconstruct, to start from scratch. To start with a wild-eyed, panic-stricken woman.
I don't know why he did it. Don't ask me. Sure, he stayed out all night. In a tavern, I guess. He'd do that sometimes. Especially since he's been out of work. But he never came home like today, Lieutenant.
How do you mean?
Well, he walked in and I could tell something was wrong. He just sat on the bed, holding his head in his hands and ignoring everything. Not paying any attention to me or anything. Just reading that old letter.
What letter?
Oh, it wasn't important. Just a letter he got from home.
Oh, let me see it.
I don't know what I did with it, Lieutenant. Oh. It didn't have anything to do with this. It was just an old letter from his sister. His home was in Arkansas. Lately, he's been getting letters from his sister there, telling him how she needed him home and how hard it was down her way, and asking him to send the money he said he'd make in Chicago. That was all. He'd read it before.
I see. Did you scold him? Did that start him off?
Well, I did get sort of angry at him, sitting there brooding and saying nothing. And I...
Yes?
Well, I did get angry. One word led to another. I picked up a glass of water and threw it in his face. He said he was leaving. Then I guess I laughed. I told him he wasn't going nowhere. He didn't have no place to go. And he did it. The rest of it. He went crazy, that's all. If he hadn't stayed out all night, it never would have happened.
Maybe it wouldn't have made any difference. Over at the tavern, I probed further. I showed a picture. The owner was nervous.
Well, yeah, he was in here. Didn't leave till I got ready to close.
Anything happen?
Well, had an argument, sort of.
About what?
Well, you know how a fella gets to bragging when he's drinking a little. Well, this fella began talking big-like. One of the other men laughed at him, told him to shut up. Said everybody knew he didn't have no other place to go. He got angry, took a swing at the other guy. Then the other guy threw a glass of beer in his face. Oh, by then, of course, I stopped him. An ordinary argument, that's all. Went home afterward. I thought he'd forget it. Never thought it'd drive him out of his head. Never thought of murder. I just never thought.
Maybe it did start in the tavern, but maybe it started long before. I checked still further, spoke to his former employer.
I never realized I had a man like that working for me. Why, he never did anything around here to get out of place. Except,
yes,
well, maybe, well, he did sort of get uppity just before he left us.
How's that?
Well, he came up into my office without an appointment. Just walked in up from the basement, asked about a job in the main plant, handling the machine, you know. Well, I told him he was best suited where he was. He said something about quitting. I said, well, go on. It sort of tickled me, times being as hard as they are. I told him to quit bluffing. You know you don't have any place to go, I said. Well, he got sort of angry, it seemed. He stood real still and just looked at me. Unnerved me a little. Finally had to call the plant policeman to get him out. You don't think that gave him a grudge against policemen, do you? You don't think that could have...
I couldn't say. It was hard to tell. But a psychiatrist in the district who understood the pages of the book, that is the Fifth District, reconstructed the crime and criminal and said...
From all the evidence, it would seem that your slayer was suffering from extreme frustration brought on by his inability to move ahead of his environment. His pent-up resentment against segregation took the form of turning against the nearest object. In this position, some individuals react passively. Others reach a point where they feel compelled to strike out. violently.
Such violence, unpredictable and unplanned, erupted spasmodically through the district. And I studied it, charted it, and dug into its inner causes in order to understand the book that was the Fifth District, where there lived more people per block than in any other district in the world, locked in by segregation. And the book that was the Fifth District, with its chapters made up of misdemeanors and crimes, was not exactly a bestseller.
The highest crime rate in the city is in this very district, Lieutenant Lewis. And this committee is demanding that you policemen do something about it. Now.
A committee of the district's leaders had come into my office.
We've been to the mayor's office and we've seen the commissioner of police, Lieutenant. The entire community is behind us and with us. We're demanding that your police find ways to reduce the crime rate and take the time to study and understand the district.
Well, I think you're exactly right, madam. Only, why don't you take your complaint up with the captain of the station? I'm just a lieutenant.
You were the lieutenant. The commissioner has told us that he's appointing you captain.
Oh? Are you sure?
Positive. Find out for yourself. Don't your superiors let you know what's going on? No. What's the police protection so poor in this city?
I found out for myself. I found I had the job of directing the district I'd studied, of discovering the hidden chapters of its crime history. But when I looked around for my force...
You want more policemen to work in your district. Is that what you're asking for, Blewett?
That's what the Southside community is asking for, and why can't I get them?
Come here. Come here. Look at this map.
Yes?
Here's the city limits. Here, there, and here. Inside, there's over 3 million people and less than 7,000 men, all told, to patrol it and protect them. Of course your district suffers. Every district suffers, man. Best you'll get will be 181 men.
100?
I know it seems like an invitation to crime. You need at least 600 men in that area, and all you've got is 181 to hold down a district with the highest crime rate in the city. The commissioner is not expecting miracles, Blewett, but do what you can.
What I could do was to pool all the knowledge I had of the district, of its good and evil, of its majority of respectable citizens and its minority of racketeers, and to watch and study the cases that came in and send squad cars cruising up and down the veins of the district to add to my understanding of the book I was studying. And one evening, my sergeant got a call.
88 Garfield Boulevard at Michigan, a stolen black Cadillac, license 15732. 88 Garfield Boulevard at Michigan, stolen black Cadillac, license 15732.
Step on it, guys. Garfield's just up ahead there.
I'm stepping. Hey, got the car coming this way?
Wrong license number. Get going. Hey, that's it parked back there. You just passed it.
Well, wait till I make a U-turn. And we'll get a closer look.
Yeah, he's pulling out.
Must have spotted us.
Well, you can't go fast in this traffic. Careful now. Watch his turn, Gus. Watch
it. All right. Where'd he go?
Turn left. Left. There he is.
For a guy who's only got a stolen car, he's sure frantic, isn't he?
Just some dumb, crazy kid out for a thrill, I bet. Just some dumb kid. You're shooting. Looks like we're going to have a party, Gus.
He's got more than a stolen car up there. Hang on.
Keep your head low.
Drive. He's drunk.
Hey, step on it. He's headed for the park. Come on, step on it.
He's not going to make that turn up there.
Just some dumb, crazy kid out to a thrill, I bet. Just some dumb kid. He's shooting. Looks like we're going to have a party, Gus.
He's got more than a stolen car up there. Hang on.
Keep your head low.
Jeez.
drive. He's drunk.
Hey, step on it. He's headed for the park. Come on, step on it.
He's not going to make that turn up there. His car's out of control.
Holy hit that shit.
Here we go. Get your gun ready.
Hold it. We won't need any guns for this. Look at this mess. Hey, there's a box down the block. Get one of the sightseers coming over there to call the ambulance. I'll check this out.
Okay, Sarge.
Hey, Mr. Huh?
Oh, my head.
We sent for the ambulance, kid. Shouldn't be long. Hey, what's this?
He's gone to call, Sergeant. How's the kid doing?
I think he's in pretty bad shape.
In the world didn't he stop? Looked like he was in on a stick-up?
No, he was in on a worse racket. He had this box of junk in the front seat with him.
Huh? What is it? Marijuana?
No. He had graduated. Heroin.
A reckless kid and a stolen car. Enough heroin in a box for 20 addicts. I called the staff together. We went over the details. Why did the kid start? Where did he get it? And who was the pepper?
Hey, kid never regained consciousness, Captain. We didn't get a chance to question him.
Then check every dope addict in the district. Right. This is one infection we've got to stop before it spreads. Yeah. Any questions?
Not here.
All right, that's all.
Nice.
Hey, Joe, got a cigarette?
It was an old police axiom that narcotic peddlers like to prey on frustrated youth. That their most fertile field was in districts where dreams are high but opportunities low. And this was my district. I watched the pattern of arrests, questioned suspects. And once, just after going off duty, I was driving home, still in uniform, and saw three men huddled together in the doorway of a school building. There was something familiar in the way the men stood there, one with his back to the wall, the others facing him. I caught the flash of a gun and stopped. The man against the wall saw me and cried out.
Help! Help!
Shut him up, Joe! Shut him up!
I fired a shot in the air.
Hey, Jesus, Joe, it's the cops. Come on, it's the cops.
Stop it, I'll shoot.
Joe, get over the fence. Come on.
They scrambled over a fence into the schoolyard. I jumped over the other side and came up facing.
Don't shoot.
Drop those guns.
Don't shoot.
All right. Now, step up here.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, but we weren't doing anything.
These are boys who held you up, mister?
Yeah, both of them.
Uh-huh.
Hey, now, look. We only wanted to talk to him, officer. Just to talk to him.
You come on over to the station. I'll give you all the talking you need.
You're not going to let me up, are you?
Just as soon as the wagon comes.
Hey, look, officer. Don't take me in before I get some medicine. I was only going to buy some money from the man to get some medicine. Wasn't that Joe? Was that Joe?
The kid trembled. I understood how sick he really was and what kind of medicine he wanted. I had him, but I still didn't have those who were making him sick. The narcotic peddlers, the wholesalers.
We've gone through the district with a fine comb, Captain. Picked up a dozen little guys, but we haven't hit the big ones yet.
Then stay on it. Check every corner where addicts loiter, and break up every kid gang where any member's got the narcotic habit, and keep moving. We're racing against time.
Okay, Captain.
My squad cars rolled, and the men kept up the search. Tracked down leads, and sometimes discovered pages in the book that was my fifth district I never yet read.
This is the kid I was telling you about, Captain. Step in here, Evan.
Yes, sir.
Sit down, son. You needn't be afraid. I just want to ask you some questions.
Yes, sir.
The sergeant tells me he's picked you up 4 or 5 times for loitering. He says any time of night or day he can find you in the streets. Is that true?
Well, in a way, sir.
Well, believe me, you don't have a chance in the streets. Not a chance in a million to grow up the way I know you'd like to. You're like any other kid, influenced by others. And the others you're bound to be thrown with where you're going will cause you to come in here on more serious charges. The sergeant says you picked up the narcotic habit, too.
Just a little.
He's dropping it, Captain. He was doing all right in school until last semester. He quit. Haven't been able to make him go back.
Where do you live, son?
I don't think he can answer that. Whenever I picked him up, it's been in a doorway or vestibule.
He sleeps there?
Every night.
Son, why don't you go home? What do you say?
All right. I'll go.
Good. We'll drive you back and talk to your folks. And no matter how much you like to run around in the street, Home's better for you. Come on. We drove down to a block on Federal Street, stopped before a tall, tired building that looked as though it wanted to collapse. The boy didn't want to go in.
Come on, son. We'll explain everything to your folks.
Nothing to explain. All right.
We walked up flights of trembling stairs, got to the platform of a broken floor. A long, narrow hallway stretched in front of us. Seemed to have 100 doors and noise coming out of them.
Which door is yours, son?
Mine. Down the hall. In the back. I have to go.
Go on. Which way?
This way.
We followed him down the long, dark hall. And already I was beginning to understand him.
Who is it? Me, Mama.
Jimmy?
Yes, sir.
Well, where have you been? And what do you want now?
Well, ma'am, we'd like to answer that for him.
Who are you?
We're from the 5th District Police Station.
In trouble again? Well, I told you. Don't bring your troubles back to me. I got enough of my own. Take him back with
you. Ma'am, don't close the door. We'd like to tell you about Jimmy.
What can you tell me? I don't already know.
We can tell you that unless you keep him home, he's going to get into serious trouble. And we think he might stay home if you'd help him.
Oh, is that what you think?
It is.
Jim, why didn't you tell him better?
Mama, I've tried to. Now look, Mrs. Evans.
Now you look. Trying to... Come inside here and look.
We stepped across the threshold. The room was lit by a kerosene lamp. Shadows were on the wall, but on the floor were 7 blankets and 7 people sleeping side by side. 4 children, 3 adults.
Of course I want Jimmy back home. I just didn't have no place to put him, was all. I just couldn't find room. Leave him here.
We left him and walked back down the trembling stairways and out into the crisp night air. We said nothing.
Well, Captain, what's on your mind?
The doorway you found him sleeping in was healthier.
I bet we find him there again inside of 2 weeks.
When we left the boy in the crowded room, I knew instantly why hundreds of children in the slums prefer to spend their time outside and who the real criminal behind much juvenile delinquency in my district was. Poor housing. Poor housing, the natural offspring of segregation. One evening a month later, the sergeant and I pushed our way through the crowd around a basement tailor shop, pushed open the door and went inside to investigate a shooting.
Well, there's the tailor. Yeah. Evidently, he resisted. There's a wrench still in his hand.
Yeah, let it lay him till the lab boys get here.
Okay. I'll go out and question some of the neighbors.
Wait a minute.
Hmm?
Hey, yeah. What's this on the floor?
Where?
Here.
Oh. Yeah, I know what it looks like.
Yeah, it's not hard to miss. Cocaine capsule.
You don't think this old guy was on the junk?
No, he wasn't. But the killer was. The capsule that told me the story also told me that peddlers were still flourishing in the district, and that I needed every trick in the police department to locate the source before it caused a major crime wave. My squad tracked down every reported crime and examined the culprits until we had some startling figures.
Oh, your guess was right, Captain. Here are the crime figures for the past month.
Oh, let me see.
Well, it's pretty much the way you figured it. 60% of all burglaries are committed by dope addicts. How come?
Well, the addicts are after just one thing, money to pay the peddlers. The only way to stop it is to cut off the supply. That means we've got to get to the source, the wholesalers. Now listen.
Yeah?
Hold it. Captain Blewett speaking. Yes? You got him? Sure. Bring him in.
What was that?
Officer Adams says he's found the man who robbed and killed that tailor a month ago. It was done by an addict, all right. And he's willing to tell where he gets the stuff. Adams bringing him in.
Here he is, Captain.
It was a break I needed. But when I saw who had been caught, I got kind of sick. A thin, nervous, jerky kid, with his eyes fixed on some spot above my head, walked in as though he was in another world. It was the Evans kid.
I tried to stay off the streets the way he told me.
You should have tried harder.
I tried. Till my stomach started hurting me. And I had to go out, get some money, buy something. Just something to stop the ache.
I thought that captain told you to lay off. I thought you told me you were quitting.
Sure, but it was too late. Besides, it's hard to stay up in that one room. Everything in the world is outside. I'm sorry I let you down, Captain. I'm sure you won't let it happen again.
The kid reached the dead end before he reached 21. We followed his leads and cracked down on the narcotic peddlers with the help of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. We cracked down again and again on crime in the busiest district in the world until the newspapers were printing different stories.
South Side felonies have fallen off sharply since a crackdown was launched on the narcotics racket by Captain Kinsey Blewett. Today, this district has one of the best records for crime solved
in the entire
city. What
has happened in the 5th District under the leadership of Captain Blewett is something which the city of Chicago hasn't seen in crime fighting for over a decade. Figures show more than a 20% reduction in crime.
Yes, I had found the key to the high crime rate, and I turned it against the instigators. And again, the 5th District was becoming like a book that I liked better as I studied it and worked in it. Someday I hope to make it a book whose characters and pages are all free from fear and from the conditions that breed misery and crime.
And now Destination Freedom presents Captain Kinsey Blewett of the 5th District with a word on juvenile delinquency.
It is a pleasure for a police captain to be invited to speak frankly about his work. As an active member of the police force of Chicago for more than 20 years, there's one stark, sober fact I'd like to get across. There is no mystery about crime. From my observations and experience, there are three major causes for crime in our city. The first is the presence of slums, overcrowded homes, and frightfully bad housing conditions. The example of a boy in today's story who was found sleeping in the doorway because it was better than his home was true. The second cause I've noticed is low incomes and unemployment. When a man or woman is not receiving a living wage, the search for a livelihood often turns to illegal means and that to serious crimes. The third and often most explosive factor in crime causes is frustration and resentment felt by Negroes and other minorities at racial discrimination. Human beings are not built to accept racial discrimination without resentment and without striking back, often simply to get relief from intolerable tensions. To those who ask me what causes crime, I must often answer that crimes are caused by something we policemen cannot arrest or put in jail. How can we arrest slums? How can we jail racial prejudice? And yet there are some of the boldest criminals behind many of our crimes. Society must see to it that these criminals murder no more. But to arrest these, a stronger police force is required than is now at my command. That force is the combined wills and concerted action of the American people. When these are put together, the real masterminds of our crime waves will be captured.
Thank you, Captain Blewett. You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of Captain Kinsey Blewett. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and directed by Larry Auerbach. The dramatized role of Captain Kinsey Blewett was played by Fred Pinkard. Others in the cast were Oscar Brown Jr., Russ Reed, Bob White, and Janice Kingslow. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and was played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. Our technician was Gary DeVlieg. Sound effects by Cliff Mueller and Dave Squires. This is Charles Mountain inviting you to join us again next week when Destination Freedom will tell the story of Catherine Dunham, world-famous dancer.